I'm Bill Alcoholic. And I don't know whose story I'm going to tell tonight. Maybe I'll tell Ryan's. He's back there. But I've heard my own story so many times this week. If I don't get drunk tonight, it's going to be a miracle. But I'm just, you know, congratulations, everybody. I'm really glad Michelle's here tonight. It's good to see you. And, I don't know. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is May 25th, 1985, believe it or not. And I would have never thought I'd be sober, 6 months from my first meeting. I didn't think I was going to stay sober a week, you know. I mean, I remember the first time I always think when people talk about the 90 days or the 3 months, I remember when I had 90 days the first time and everybody was patting me on the back and I was like, I know I got high sometime. I just don't. I mean, really, I would question my own sobriety. I'd be sober and I'd think there's no way this is really going down. Like, you know, and when people would help me, I would feel horrible. I'd be like, look, help somebody who's going to stay sober. You know what I mean? Because I'm not going to stay sober. I mean, I'm sober right now, and it's really unbearable. But, you know, I don't know. I'm going to tell some stories. Where's the clock? Okay, and I got my people, right? Joe's got me covered. But, I met Todd that night. I was so ready to put a gun in my mouth that night. I'm watching The Fast and the Furious with all these kids that are like 15 years younger than me. And I'm like, my life has come to a complete end in Tampa. You know, I mean, I moved down here. I was about 14 years sober. And, I mean, it tested my sobriety. You know, it really did. And it wasn't anything wrong with Tampa. It's just me. You know what I mean? I don't like change. I don't like asking for help. You know what I mean? I've been sober in the same place all these years. Where everybody knew me as the kid that got sober and stayed, you know, and I had to change, and it's so funny. I look at it now when I finally gave in, you know, and I had a transfer back to Ohio. I was here about a year, and I would have been gone. And if I would have got my will, I wouldn't have met Todd. I wouldn't have seen this group. I wouldn't have met so many people here that have, you know, helped me so much. I mean, if I started dropping names, I'd be here for a whole hour just mentioning people's names that have helped me and enriched my sobriety, you know. They wanted me to go to this young people's group, and I didn't want to go. I was like, that's lame. I'm not going to a young people's group, special interest, whatever, you know. And, I mean, I was like 34-year-old, 75-year-old old-timer is what I sounded like. But anyway, I came, you know. I couldn't turn down an opportunity to run my mouth. So, you know, I came and spoke. They did some different stuff. But, I mean, you know, like I said, it's just been amazing to watch it grow. I mean, you know, with Todd, when I first met Todd, I really did think it was too late for him, you know. He was pretty cooked, you know. And David, I remember him freaking bringing David. David would be on methadone, just moping around. He'd be like, here, take the coffee pot. You know, I'd be like, dude, that guy's going to rob you or something, you know. Dave's sober. I mean, it's a good thing I'm not in control, because a lot of people would not be sober. Because I wouldn't have went and picked him up and brought him back. There's a lot of people that are here because people kept showing up at their house and picking him up, you know. I don't know. I started drinking at 14. I was in my first AA meeting by 18. You know, it was like a bad after-school special. Like I always say, I mean, I just couldn't believe it, you know. Didn't drink long, but I mean, when I drank, the first thing I drank was Carlo Rossi wine. I always say this. I just remember it tasted really bad. But when the alcohol got in me, I felt the effect. I just remember feeling, you know, warm and smiling, a genuine smile. You know what I mean? I mean, really, just really feeling happy. I was the type of kid, I was plagued with anxiety. I mean, I had anxiety so bad that it's a good thing I drank, or I probably would have hung myself. I was just off the chain as a little kid. I mean, I was always just like having panic attacks and just worried. What anything I'd see on TV, I was just like, you know, so afraid I couldn't sleep. I'd see something about Bigfoot, you know, I'd be like, oh God, Bigfoot's going to kill me tonight, you know. And I mean, I'm not... It sounds funny, but I mean, I was terrified, really. I mean, that's just the kind of brain I had, you know. And, I'd see something about a fire, and I'd be like, oh, my house is going to burn down. I'm going to die. I'd just lay in bed waiting for the house to burn down, you know. And so drinking was an awesome thing, you know. I drank, and I just, you know, I just felt great, you know. Immediately... You know, everything changed. I mean, it was amazing how fast it changed. I went from like I was going to go in the Air Force Academy and become a pilot to next thing you know, I want to live, you know, I'm going to become a farmer. I'm going to grow pot and, you know, I mean, wear bib coveralls and be a hippie, you know. But I don't know. It didn't last long. I hitchhiked a lot. I grew up in Loveland, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cincinnati, and it's kind of like Lakeland, I guess. You know what I mean? There's a lot of corn, which I thought was really lame. and there was a lot of hitchhiking because I had to go like 7 or 8 miles to where the cool people were, you know, to the seedier apartment complexes and such, you know what I mean, where, you know, both parents worked and you could do whatever you wanted. So I would hitchhike, and hitchhiking, you know, was interesting. People would pick you up that were like hippie flower child people, or they're pretty much straight up sociopaths. And, you know, and I mean, it would be like, you'd be like, you know, freezing to death, wishing you were in a car, to, you know, in a car, wishing you were freezing to death again. But anyway, get things going. Got my first DUI at 17, you know, and the hitchhiking, I thought if I'll get a car, I'll start to drink normal. I got my license, got a DUI, just about that quick. I didn't get a DUI for drinking, though. I got a DUI for going to Arby's, is what I thought happened, you know, because I was pulling out from getting a beef and cheddar, and I cut off a State Boy. So, you know, if you would have seen me hitchhiking, which you would have, I would have been like, man, if you wouldn't have got that sandwich, you'd be in a car with heat right now. You are an idiot. You know, and I didn't say that once or twice, hundreds of times. You know, every time I'd walk, I'd think, man, if only you wouldn't have got the beef and cheddar. So I didn't go to Arby's, I think, until Ficky Pot a couple years ago, and when it was down in wherever on the other coast. But I went to Arby's a couple years ago. But anyway, so I had willpower with certain things. But got my license back, you know, after losing them and hitchhiking and freezing to death again. And the night I get them back, or not the night I got them back, that's an exaggeration, but not, I didn't have them back long. And my dad was like, you know, if you drink, just call me. He's like, you know, just call me and I'll come pick you up. He said, I don't want to see you get a DUI, you know. And I remember it was just so awesome because we're having this intense, like, family meeting for people from divorced homes. You know what I'm talking about. Like, my dad's in town. My mom, we're having this family meeting. Now, I live with my mother, so she knows how insane I really am. You know what I mean? She is terrified of me. I basically am just locked down in the basement. All you hear is loud music, and there's a lot of bad smells. You know, a lot of alcohol, a lot of dope, and a lot of human waste kind of things. But anyway, I would just, you know, stay down there for, she'd be like, I'd overhear her, like, talking to my old man. She'd be like, he's been down there for like 3 days. He hasn't left his room, you know, because if I had barbiturates or you know, Demerol or something, I, you know, took some long naps. But, you know, I just thought she was a total drama queen. You know what I mean? It's like, she's a complete drama queen. And she just, leave me alone, you know. And anyway, the old man was like, look, you can drive, just don't drink and drive, just call me. So I'm like, awesome, you know what I mean? I love you, Dad. So I called him that night from the highway patrol station after I flipped my car with a DUI, you know, and all night all I'm doing is bragging to all my friends how I cannot get a DUI. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, I just call the old man, he's totally cool. And I had friends with me that were like, one guy I think had soccer tryouts the next day, so he wasn't even drinking, you know what I mean? And he like begged me, like, please let me drive. And I was like, no way, dude, you can't drive the Stang. And I had this old 65 Mustang, I flipped it. You know, and I'm screaming at him, like, why'd you let me drive? You know, and that's how I always was. It was always someone else's fault. So I, you know, got a DUI, and I just remember Dad pulling in and him being like, you know, and I just turned 18, so I was like, great, I'm going to jail, you know, and you know, he's like, well, what are you going to do? I was like, I'm going to go to jail, just relax, you know, and I was more concerned about my legal defense the next morning, you know, sober. And a buddy of mine was in a care, you know, it was 84, they first started having these treatment centers. And I was making fun of him the day before. So he calls, and I'm like, dude, what's the number of that place, you know? I'm like, I got a DUI. So I went in there, and, you know, it was a big joke. I got a pass, snuck in some weed. Treatment's a lot easier if you got weed. And so I just go in a group, baked, you know, and got out, you know, went to court. Isn't it commendable, young Williams, taking care of his alcohol problem, blah, blah, blah. And lost my license for, like, you know, 2 years. I'm like, well, this is cool, you know. I just... But the thing about that place is they had AA speakers come in. I heard all kinds of people speak. And, I mean, I heard plumbers talk and doctors and rich ladies and poor ladies and bikers and people who've been in prison, people that hadn't been in prison. It really kind of blew my mind, the people that were, like, educated and came from good families and how they were alcoholics. I mean, I understood how I'm from a broken home, you know. I mean, my poor mother, I blamed her for everything until I was about 30, I guess. But my sponsor was always, you know, when my sponsor met my mom, he shook her hand. He said, you got a lot of guts to put up with this crap for 18 years, you know. And so I, you know, went to all these meetings and heard them. And I thought, you know, maybe I am an alcoholic. But, you know, I mean, I'm 19, you know. It's like, I'll get sober when I'm 21. You know, when I get my license back, that's when, you know. Because that's my only problem is this mother's against drunk driving. You know what I mean? They're hassling those kids, you know, that are out trying to drive and stuff. And so I when I saw that I couldn't stop drinking, just like they said in AA, that really irritated me too. I start drinking, I can't stop, just like they said I would. You know, it was like a bad movie. Anybody who's gone back out knows. I was like, well, I don't get my license back for 2 years anyway, so I won't worry about quitting drinking until right before I get my license back. So, you know, I thought to myself, I don't rob people. Well, 3 months later, I got a robbery charge. I robbed some guy I met in treatment. And, you know, I was looking at 5 to 15 years in Ohio State Penitentiary. And at that time, if you ever seen the Shawshank Redemption, that place was real and it was open. and I thought it was real funny. You know, everybody's like, oh, I'm going to college. I'm going to the Army. You know, I'm going to this. I'm like, I'm going to prison. You know, and I'd laugh and I'd be like, I'm going to go make license plates, you know. And then the older guys, they were like, dude, I don't know what you're laughing about. You're looking at going to old Mansfield. It's no joke. You know, I mean, I'm talking guys that were, you know, serious badasses. I was just a dumbass. You know what I mean? And then and they were like, you know, they're like, dude, that place is no joke, you know. And I don't know, man. It got my attention. So I got an attorney, the same attorney for my last DUI. And he told my dad that he should hire someone to beat the hell out of me. So I got another attorney. And he was, you know, he just gave us some prices and was like, look, he goes, you're just, don't worry. You're going to do like 18 months. That's all. I was like, no, wait a minute. Time out. You know, I'm like, I don't have the people skills to buy cigarettes, all right? I really don't think I got the people skills for the penitentiary. You know what I mean? Because seriously, sober, I can't buy cigarettes. It's stressful. You know what I mean? You got to say Marlboro, you know? And for me, that was really heavy sober. You know what I mean? Drunk, I'll go in and try to rob the place. But sober, you know what I mean? And it was funny. I was talking to my buddy that went through treatment. He's still drunk. And I was talking to him last night, and he was making fun of me about how we couldn't get anything. If you didn't get in a drive-thru, I didn't get it towards the end because it was too intense. Like going into a place and having to go to the counter, talk to people. No, I don't do that. Go through the drive-thru where you don't have to face anybody and you just hand the money through the window. You know what I mean? Because you know you're such a freak. You know what I mean? Like people are going to report you if you're seen, you know? So I went into treatment, even though my attorney told my dad it was a waste of money, waste of time. He said, you're still going to go to prison. And but I knew there was something at AA, you know, because I had heard the speaker. So I went in there and I did everything they said. And also, it's amazing. When I think I'm going to go to prison, I became very open-minded about God and spiritual concepts. You know, so I'm like on my knees, like every night, like, God, please, you know, keep me sober, you know. And I'll do anything, you know, I'll become a missionary. I'll go to Africa, you know, whatever. And I thought I was laying on a little too heavy, but I kept doing it. And it also is humiliating seeing all these people that I had just met, you know what I mean, the volunteers. And so they're like, oh, you're back. You're only out like a month. And I was like, you know, before I'm whining about a possible 30 days in the county jail, now I'm whining about 15 years in prison, you know. And it's humiliating, you know, for a genius, you know, to have to come to AA. And AA just annoyed me. You know what I mean? I was like, can't I take some pills? Or, like, isn't there some kind of therapy I can go to? I mean, this AA is really dumb. You know what I mean? It's like, because they'd say stuff like, you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. I'd be like, oh, good one. Good one. That's really sneaky, Mr. AA. You know, and it's not, if a train hits you, it's not the caboose that kills you and all that stuff. I'd be like, God, this is for the burnout and brain dead, you know. But I mean, it did. It just annoyed me, all their little sayings. So I kept going to meetings and like, you got to get a sponsor. And I really didn't like any of these people. But one night we went to this meeting called Friday Night Live. It was a young people's group. And my sponsor spoke, and he was just hilarious. And he was crazy like I was crazy. You know what I mean? He was talking about stuff that I would never admit to another person and laughing about it. Like, he talked about driving to work in rush hour traffic when he didn't have a job on acid so he'd feel like part of society. And I was like, that's my guy. You know, I didn't ask him because he was spiritual or he knew about the big book or God or something. I could care about any of that stuff. I wanted, that dude's nuts like me, you know, and I can trust him, you know. So I started talking to him, and I would make stuff up. I would never tell him anything true, you know, because I wanted to find out how he'd handle these situations, you know. It's my life. I mean, you know what I mean? So I'd make up imaginary problems that I heard other people have just to see how he'd approach them. And I did for a long time. I mean, I didn't trust anybody. But anyway, I got out of there. stayed sober by some miracle. I had like 3 months and 6 months, and I'll never forget. I wanted him to go to court with me, you know what I mean? So I was trying to hit him up for that, but I was, I'd never really come out and ask. I was such a wuss, but I kind of kept hinting around to it. And finally, he goes, "Bill, don't worry." He said, "They got lots of AA in prison." He says, "So when you get to prison, you'll be able to go to AA." And I was like, what a cold-blooded, you know, and I would have reported him to intergroup if I knew the number, but he's still my sponsor, you know, and it's been like, I don't know, 27, 28 years, whatever it's been, but it was funny when I got 5 years, he goes, "You know what you taught me, man?" I go, "What?" He goes, "You can't say anything wrong to a drunk." He goes, "I remember I hung up the phone, I thought, man, that's pretty messed up what I just said to him." I was like, "Oh, well," you know, he's like, "That's what came out," you know, and he said, "But you stayed sober." And I was like, "You son of a..." You know what I mean? But I don't know. I love the man. I still talk to him on a regular basis. You know, sponsorship is probably the most important thing that happened. Because without sponsorship, nothing else could have happened. You know what I mean? First, you got to become... Like it says in the book, you got to become honest with someone. And the thing that held me back and got me drunk the most... I relapsed many times after that and tried to go to the penitentiary real hard. But... What I would do is I would go through the steps, and he would, you know, go into this. It's a program of action, right? And he got me reading the big book, and I read the book, and I knew that if I wanted to leave stuff out of the inventory, which I think most people that come here, that's as soon as they read it, the step, they know what they're going to leave out, you know? And really, that's really all that needs to be on there. You can dump the rest. But anyway, I knew what needed to be on this inventory. You know what I mean? I was like, there's no way I'm telling anybody this stuff, unless maybe they got some terminal disease and they might die within the week and I can keep an eye on them, you know? But anyway, you know, I wouldn't do it. And I would drink. Just like it says in the book, I wouldn't do the inventory and I would drink. So I'd go through one, I'd go two, three, no inventory, you know, no action, no writing. And finally, he was like, "You know, Bill," he goes, "I wrote all that stuff down, and it really helped me, you know, because I was getting ready to drink. I knew I was. And I'd been dry about 8 months. And I went to Ikipah in 85 in Colorado and got high on the plane. Or before I got on the plane, I got high on the way to Ikipah. But I'd stayed dry 8 months, and I was getting ready to drink again. And I don't know, he convinced me to do it. It was weird. I was like, all right, I'm going to write everything down. And my advice to you, if you're going to write your inventory, is write fast. And don't reread it. Don't try to proofread it. You know, I'd write it, and then I'd read it. I'm like, man, that sounds really, that's nasty. You know what I mean? It's like, there's got to be a way to, like, word that different, make it sound better. I mean, there's only so much lipstick you can put on a pig. But anyway, I wrote fast. I got it done. And I met him. I couldn't believe it. I remember, and he wanted to do it at this AA club. Todd's been to the club we did it at. We did this old club called Oak Street in Cincinnati. It looks like the Adams Family house. And we did it in this room upstairs about the meeting thing. And there was meetings going on. I was like, are you sure? I mean, have you checked this room for bugs and stuff? Like, I was real concerned about the security of the room. You know what I mean? I was like, there's people in the other room, like, you know. And he'd be like, ah, oh, it'll be fine. We'll just shut the door, you know. And he wasn't concerned at all about the sensitivity of this mission. But, anyway, I did the inventory. I thought it was going to be like this 9-hour thing with candles and him hugging me and telling me what a horrible life I had. Instead, it was a lot of him laughing his ass off. And you know what I mean? Me telling him stuff, thinking I'm going to freak him out, you know, and him being like, yeah, well, anything else? You know, and when it was all done, he said, he helped me see a lot of things in different light. But also, when it was all done, he said, Bill, you've just given up all your excuses for staying drunk. He goes, you're just an alcoholic. And he goes, you want to go to this meeting with me over in Kentucky? And we went to this meeting, and man, I ran around AA like, you know, I was like, this is my inventory. I just couldn't believe I really did it. You know what I mean? I told him everything. I didn't have any secrets. And then what was even cooler is he didn't tell anybody. You know what I mean? It was like a few months later, and nobody said anything. And because of that, a bond was created where I trusted that man with my life. Anything that I used to carry around in my head and just drive myself crazy, I'd tell him right away. I'd call him every night and flush this thing. You know what I mean? Every night I'd call him up around 11:30, man, and I'd just be like, you know, I'd tell him all this stuff that happened all day and all the people I wanted to kill and how somebody told me I had a nice shirt and I know they're really making fun of me or whatever, you know what I mean? And my job, everybody hates me in my job and, you know, all this crazy stuff. But, you know, I'm just so grateful, you know, that I got that kind of relationship with my sponsor. And he got me so involved in action and going so against what I think. He goes, I don't care what you think. What we care about is what you do. And, you know, we would go to a mental hospital. On Monday nights, we'd be at the freaking One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You know, I'm talking where people have been in there like 25 years in bathrobes and their fingers are just nicotine stains. And then on Tuesday, we go to work release. Then on The other, once a month, he wanted me to go to the prison, which I always talk about this. I thought that was completely retarded. Like, let's go to a maximum security prison and hang out. Maybe we can become hostages. You know, I just thought he was a real idiot. And but we'd go up there, and, you know, it was a two-hour ride up, two-hour ride back, and then 2 hours AA up there. So, like, he wanted to do, like, 7 hours AA in one day. It was kind of radical, but I'm still here, you know. And I, you know, those are some of the most priceless memories of my sobriety. We'd be riding up to the prison, you know, and the talks we would have, you know. And I'd be so mad if anybody else showed up, because he'd invite other people to go, you know. I just wanted it to be me and him. I wouldn't want anybody, like, another new guy coming. I'd be looking at him like, you son of a bitch, what are you doing here? I'm sitting up front, you know what I mean? You know, oh, God, I quit smoking, then he made me sit in the back. I was really mad, you know, because they all smoked in the front, you know. I don't know. I just, you know, just so many things. I wasn't planning on talking tonight, but I'm so happy that, you know, Todd's down here, and that you know, that God had me stay here. And for all you people out here, you know who you are. Thank you so much. I mean, I can't tell you how much thinking about you guys gives me relief from my mind. Thanks.
I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all do the same things, we all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I've been in bed 5 of the last 7 months and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flash into my mind on which would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it all up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, we understand what service is, so let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue, and if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing, none of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, or to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.